to the show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So, whoa, it is good to gather together at these times, whoa. And just a segue from the previous show, Richard Walensky's interview with Armistead Maupin, in which he said, you know, I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be here at all, you know. And we go, right, to receive grace, and as Bly says, for keeping our small boats afloat when so many have gone down in the storm. And we go, yes, oh, there we go. So, in the words of Isaiah, speak to the weary a word that will rouse them. There we go. I love also Gustavo Petro, the president-elect of Colombia, said, it's no longer left and right, but life and death. And we go, oh, right. So we're here to continue translating the light to our community hearths from the wildly resonant and eager to help full moon just behind us, which we will do. I do love the movie Everything Everywhere All at Once. The title is great. It's a wildly whimsical, deep, pertinent, trippy film. Now streaming, whose title serves as a guide to America's Pluto return, Everything Everywhere All at Once, the January 6th hearings, all of our micro and macro lives, and this brightest of moons just behind us, the moon at perigee, closest to the Earth. 'Tis a big moon for big, wrathful Dakini Mama to incarnate into effective, aroused, woof, there we go. So, more than perfectly, we say, let beauty and danger serve as incentives. So once again, we welcome political, spiritual, full-spectrum guide Pat Ewing to continue brewing our election magic council that we're going to keep going in many forms through this crucial election in November, because the situation is so dire, we can't afford the luxury of realism. So viewing so much dangerous and dingy horror that we'll put on the table as incentive, it's time to encourage our jaunty and defiant, liberating trickster selves. You know, let's get down to get up. So welcome, Patricia Ewing.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so we translating all of our conversing from backstage to onstage. And, you know, I forwarded, the article of Australian woman on her way to Canada for a pet-sitting gig is stopped in the American airport, detained, interrogated several times. Are you pregnant? No. Have you had an abortion recently? No. And then they deported her. It was like, oh, conniption fits. Because did you read that? Did you get a chance to read that thing?
Yeah, I did. I did get a chance to read it. I did. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead, right?
No, it was like there's something where you're not allowed to go through the United States without a certain visa in order to make money on the other side for a short-term project. And she wasn't making money. So this is what is so interesting and why it's so important to know who your president is, who your elected officials are, because the people they hire actually, in the folks that get hired, whoever their boss is, has a pedagogy, has an idea, has a way of being and a way of thinking. And even when a president leaves office, what's fascinating is these people are still around. And this is not a political pointy. This is TSA. But their point of view and what they're trying to create and how they're trying to do it, it permeates a system that goes so far down into hundreds and hundreds of thousands of jobs and the way people see things that it can take a long time for people to figure out that these kind of people are in those jobs and then what to do about it. Because they don't care that they're throwing somebody out who's an Australian because they're not an American and they don't vote. So it's easier for them to pull something like this off. But it's an indication of a system of what we're potentially walking into.
Right.
Like she's the first. Her first,
right.
Americans next, right?
Yeah, and the ongoing inquisition. Are you pregnant? You're wearing a loose-fitting dress. No, I'm not. Have you had an abortion recently? Ask the TSA people. It's like, oh, just anyway.
Well,
so and then off she went back to
us. Take the 10-year-old girl gets raped in Ohio, has to go to Indiana for an abortion because she can't get it in Ohio anymore. And what happens? Jim Jordan, the Wall Street Journal, the Republican establishment come down on it saying this is a fake story. And then the newspaper who actually put the story out, who talked to the OBGYN, and the OBGYN said, yes, this is a real story. The Republicans came back and said, she's lying. She's an abortion doctor. And then they arrest the man who rapes the girl. And finally, they know. And then it's crickets from the this Republican group. Crickets. The Wall Street Journal basically says, well, you know, things happen. How were we supposed to know it wasn't true? It's a newspaper. Well,
crickets, except for now they're seeking to prosecute the doctor, you know, who helped her, right? So,
right.
So, yeah, the ongoing. Right. Well, and what you said about, you know, important who the president and everybody is, because we were speaking also about the corruption still in the Department of Justice, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, what we were talking about is that, you know, I'm curious. If you have a Department of Justice that was how many Jeff Clarks were in the Department of Justice? Well, number one, what if there were more? And then all of a sudden they have to take on that which they condoned and supported and helped? I wonder if there are people in the Department of Justice right now who helped the insurrection, who were helping on this election fraud. And is the Department of Justice in a place? And I think that they need to be brought into the light as well. Is this an issue, and is that why this is taking so long from a Justice Department standpoint? So, well, the entire coup plot and how it's actually rolling, and are they having trouble because some of the people are on different sides of this issue?
Right. And then we suffuse our life as it is with the mythological metaphors available. So we are in the middle of America's Pluto return, looking at all the shadow, you know, the full moon and the sun and Mercury and Ceres, Demeter, goddess of the earth. We work for her. Opposite Pluto, there's the dangerous incentive. But it says, you know, to rededicate to democracy, got to go all the way back, really, to 1776 forward, and all of the betrayals and the corruption, got to look at it all, and all the corruption, you know, in Department of Justice, I mean, all those things, you know. So the Sun opposes Pluto, but trines Neptune, going, here, backstage, we'll help you out, the invisibles will help you out, what do you want to swoosh? You know, imagine the thing, swooshing all corruption out of the halls of governance, just as a good idea to do that, and we go, oh,
there's a difference, I'd like to make a tweak to that, which is, swooshing it out, but knowingly swooshing it out. I think the reason all of this is in our faces is because we, two reasons. One, we need to see it. The idea of knowing piece painstakingly, knowing piece by piece, idea after idea of what has been going on with our government that we've handed over to a group of professionals that we had no business handing over directly for this long. We need to know. So we're in that, as you call it, the fourth part of a five-act play, that time in which the negative comes in and the story begins to falter. You have these wonderful protagonists who go on their way and they're really excited about their action, and then some sort of darkness befalls them. And right now we're in that darkness, but it also means that the resolution is coming next. If we act correctly, if we adult up, if we take the responsibility that we need to in order to correct these actions, it just so happens on our watch, America's issues that its negative issues that it's had are sort of coming to the surface, the things that we've suppressed, the things that we have taken advantage of, the things that we have not participated in, the things that we have ignored. Happen on our watch while we're here and we're alive are actually coming right now to the surface for us to look at, participate in, say, don't want that. Okay, you're going to have to go to jail for this. Okay, you're going to have to do this. Everybody now has to participate. And that's, I think, a positive of all of this is the sort of countrywide participation that is necessary and being forced on us, whether we want it or not, but it is a way to adult up in within our political system to create something better, to create, to fulfill a promise. A promise that we all know and that we're born with in our hearts. We know what the promise of America is, and we try to fulfill it every day. Now we actually get to do this more quickly because all of this stuff is coming up to the surface. So that's a benefit of it. It makes for faster resolution when it comes.
Right. I'd sent you, excuse me, the bow. Well, I'm fond of Bo on YouTube commentary, in which he says the number of people in Congress who will be eventually tied to this will grow a lot. We go, oh, accountability, accountability. I did a chart because the hearings are so kind at putting out exact times, right, for everything, including the, you know, Trump's tweet on December 19th at 1:42 a.m. And we look for auguries. what's rising then, 17 plus Libra, is men placed under arrest. Accountability. It's like, oh, please, thank you. Okay, we'll work with that divination. And Mars square Pluto, yes, the violent thing and all. So there's that. And then, you know, where do we see positive Saturn? You know, if we've outsourced Saturn authority to sociopathic dingbats and who are cruel and all, you know, where is good Saturn? And I think Benny Thompson, the chair of the hearings, is profound. I see Obatala, Saturn positive, standing behind him as dignified, competent, and other words like that that we don't often use, right? And then Jamie Raskin's summation was so, you know, American carnage, which has been visited, you know, referenced by Trump in his unhinged inaugural address. He goes, but that is what has been visited. And we go, good leadership. And Jamie Raskin, he's my Maryland representative.
He's
truly
fabulous.
You know, heroic, honed by grief. You know, in the mystery play, you know, this powerful figure of ethical authenticity and eloquence, you know, moving through the tragic suicide of his beloved son into the January 6th, where he'd brought some of his family members to help them grieving and recovering, right? And then into this completely skookum, connected to the spirits, completely competent for the work at hand. And we go, well, good. good Saturn, and speaking, you know, of American carnage and those things, so positive Saturn. And then, you know, the things that give us conniption fits, and I, you know, mentioned to you just, well, really, just any part of the Washington Post or any paper, you know, which is for Manchin's vote, whoops, I'm reading it here, Biden weighs breaking climate vow, right? Going, oh, okay, might have to drill, you know, some parts of the Gulf of Mexico that I promised not to. I might have to drill parts of Alaska that I promised not to, for the unsure whatever of Manchin. And you say, of course, to all of this and all of the kind of like hand-wringing, which is, if we vote and get two more senators, right? I'm handing it to you here, right? If we vote,
more
senators.
That's what I mean. We're very close to the resolution in a lot of ways. And one of them is, if we just have two more U.S. senators and we can keep the House, Manchin is not relevant. And what will stop us from doing both those things is if we eat our own, if we actually go after those who are trying to help. Where I'd like to see us think about, or I'd like to think Biden is, poor Biden for being put in a position to deal with Manchin this way, instead of, oh my gosh, what's he doing now? Which, you know, so he's not the horror. Biden is not the horror show. He's in the horror show. So he's the one who is having to lead us through the comeuppance of America for the last 50 years. All the stuff that Reagan, Clinton, Obama, Bush's, everybody did over the last 50 years, ever since, you know, for longer, Nixon, they're all on Biden's desk right now. He's not getting away. If you notice the issues on his desk, he's not getting away with anything. And what I find fascinating as well, and again, this is sort of in your idea of the mystery play and the five-act play, what I find interesting about Biden is that he's not an Obama figure. He's not a Reagan or Trump figure. He's not a hugely charismatic person who can take us out of the reality of the pain that we're in or the thing we need to organize out of. And that's a good thing. If he was overly charismatic, we would just be drawn to another Trump. We'd be drawn to another person who could take away our pain or not handle it. He is, by the way he's leading, he's forcing us to do it with him. And that's what I mean about how our democracy is changing to be full participation. So it was always meant to be full participation. You and I were always supposed to be having these conversations, and so is everyone. Dinner tables were meant to. Thomas Jefferson started the public school system because he said, uh-oh, if we're going to have a democracy, people are going to have to be educated. We're going to have to figure out how to continue to push this forward. And it's literally person by person. And what's happening in our country now is forcing that to happen. The Washington is not, it isn't able to keep up the illusion of competence in a way that, you know, what, well, Trump's decimation of the presidency and taking down the presidency to a point, and Biden trying to just get the turn the lights on and all the different agencies right now. So we're trying to get it back, and people are trying to work on getting it back. But here's the positive part of it, is that now we get to choose how it's reorganized. So now we get to choose how it's going to work. But in this time period, we have to pull together. In this time period, we have to say we're going to vote. We're in this time period, we got to make sure the vote's secure. In this time period, we have to actually discuss and do. And what I also want to say is, all the issues that people on progressives care about, people on the left care about, are almost here. So Clinton did not care about those issues, not one jot, right? Bush Sr. didn't care about them. Bush Jr. didn't care about them. Obama cared about them a little bit. He brought more liberal thinking into the White House. Biden actually does care about these issues. And that in and of itself is a change from the American presidency that from Jimmy Carter on became, well, Reagan, meaning Reagan, Jimmy Carter then to Reagan, became so conservative that our points of views went right out the table. I'm seeing a president who's trying to figure out how to integrate these issues. Successfully sometimes, successfully not time, but look at what's on his plate. If we had two more U.S. senators, if we could keep the House, if we cared about that, if we cared about what the voting that's going on, we can actually do a lot more, and you have a president who would be willing to do that. If right. This was Bill Clinton or George Bush, no matter whether he had the Senate or the House, he wouldn't be moving in that direction. He
right.
just wouldn't.
And you'd said, you know, nobody wants to go talk to Saudi Arabia and talk to the murderous sociopath MBS, right? You know, but it's on his plate. So
it's on his
yeah,
watch.
And then
it's on his watch.
Right.
I mean, you have to get them. There's no oil. There's a huge oil crisis. You had Russia who wanted to go from Ukraine and right into Poland. So what Bush had to do, and Bush, listen to me, what Biden had to do was stop Russia at the Ukrainian border, which he then got NATO to work together to do that. But Russia said, okay, then I'm going to shut off if you don't want my oil, fine, all the prices are going to increase. So then all of a sudden all the prices are increasing, not just here, but precipitously worse all around the world. And so he's right now, that destabilizes Israel, because now Israel and Iran are still in a huge issue. Oil is making it a lot worse for Israel, and it's a lot worse for than every other Mideast country. And Biden's now in the middle of that, trying to straighten that out. So does he have to talk to Saudi Arabia? He does. So he's adult enough to say, okay, I'm going to have to do this. I'm going to, you know, am I going to shake this guy's hand? Am I going to have to work with him? He is, because of the situation that was created like 30 or 40 countries away.
Right.
So and, that's what and I mean the, about everything's on his plate.
Right. And the art of conversing without, well, yeah, because so part of what, you know, what tricks us, you know, into tyranny, I think I'd like to throw the approval, disapproval into the cauldron. Do you approve of this or disapprove of this? It's like, no, it's irrelevant. It's so American to approve or disapprove of something within 3 seconds of hearing it. Like, I love that. And the polls are that way. Do you approve of Biden? Do you disapprove? Do you whatever? And it's like, no, are you willing to work with this, right? And, you know, we'd said, you know, mature democracy, what a participatory, and you'd mentioned also about, you know, you volunteering for on an election day for voter protection, right? And just that's something available to all of us as citizens. Yeah. Do you want to say more about that?
Yeah. Well, I am going to work as a voter protection person, poll worker in Pennsylvania. Pick your state. There are voter protection programs in every state. It's a, you know, volunteer job, and you make sure that no shenanigans happen. You make sure that everybody who's there gets the chance to vote, that if there is an issue that you can help and support it. And there are all of us need to know that this system is being taken up, dismantled in a way so that only a small group of people within this country can have full control. The Supreme Court next year is going to be hearing a case that could actually take the power of elections away from us and give it to state legislatures. They're hearing that case. Now, what did Trump want to do? What did Trump want to do this time? He wanted to take the power of the vote out of everyday people voting the way we've been doing it for 200 plus years and give it to legislatures. Because he knows that any Republican legislature was going to vote for him. So now there's a case that's in front of the Supreme Court, and they said, yes, they take it. So next year, that's going to be decided on. So it is more than one particular issue right now. And yes, there are a lot of huge issues that are on the table. Women's bodily autonomy is on the table. We can codify Roe v. Wade if we have the Senate and the House. We have to vote for that, but we also have to participate now in this democracy. It's now a time to adult up as far as this democracy. We have to participate in it. It took the wacko right, the Christian, this weird Christian right group, 50 years to get rid of Roe v. Wade. And they worked on it for 50 years. They never said, oh my gosh, I voted for Biden. Oh my gosh, look what happened. They never said that. They literally took a 50-year plan. And that's who are trying to take our country away from us, are people who are willing to plan for 50 years.
Right.
So our goal, it is our job now, is to say, hey, I kind of like our democracy. I have to participate in it. I've got to do what I need to do. There's, you know, www.padems.com/all-in, A-L-L-I-N. You can go to Pennsylvania. You can do it virtually. You can do it in other places as well. If you don't want to, you know, it's not about working on a campaign. It is actually supporting the campaign apparatus.
Say the beginning part of the website again. Yeah.
www.padems.com/ALLIN, all in. And that's their voter protection group. And they're looking for thousands of volunteers to go to every precinct to make sure nothing happens. And I worked in Pennsylvania in 2000 and just, I mean, literally volunteer for a month, but a friend of mine went and did voter protection, and one of the reasons she was there is because Pennsylvania is an open carry state. And they were concerned that there might be folks with guns around who are trying to intimidate other voters. And this is where we're at. This is just where we're at. We have to make sure that the apparatus of our voting system stays secure, or we won't be able to make any of these decisions.
No, this is good to brew our trickster, whatever tonic, because the Pennsylvania governor's race, right, is Josh Shapiro at 44%, Doug Mastriano at 40%, and that can make us, when we're alone, go, oh my God, what could this bunch of? Guide us through this, because we can, we've gathered here to compost our despair and conniption fits into something useful, into dedication to participatory democracy. But just remind us, Doug Mastriano was there breaching the Capitol, right? Just take us into that.
Yeah, Doug Mastriano is total anti-choice person who. You know, and he also was at January 6th. He was actually at the Capitol, and he couldn't, you know, he absolutely believes that the election was stolen. He is about as right-wing as you can get, even for Pennsylvania. And he is, right now, he is behind Josh Shapiro. Josh Shapiro is actually, he was Attorney General of Pennsylvania, and he's the one who brought 40 election cases. He actually won. Doug Mastriano was part of the team that kept trying to sue to overturn the Pennsylvania election over and over and over in 2000. And Doug Shapiro, because Josh Shapiro, because he was Attorney General, actually won 40 lawsuits to keep the vote correct. So he does get this stuff. And then John Fetterman is running against Dr. Oz. And if that's a pickup, because there was a Republican in that seat who stepped down. So it was a Republican, and it is a Republican seat right now. So if we can put a Democrat in that, that's actually a pickup for D. So that's one, and he's ahead right now. So we need one more. So you've got like Herschel Walker in South Carolina and going against Raphael Warnock, right? And Herschel Walker,
Georgia.
I mean, here's a guy who said, what?
In Georgia.
Sorry, Georgia. Georgia. So he's recently said, well, you know, we have really, really good air in America. And so our good air goes to China. And so it mixes with their bad air. And that bad air comes back to us as bad air. So therefore, we have to clean up China's air in America. So that's how he explained climate change.
Right, and many other,
we have
much more.
Yeah. Well, there's a bunch others that, you know, Wisconsin could be a D pickup. So we have very good opportunities. The House is the issue. The members of Congress is going to be, right now, is a little more difficult, but it can be done. And the Republicans in the Senate and the House have said what they want to do is make sure that they ban abortion from the time of conception in America, codify it in law if they win. They will also do away with the January. They want to have their own committee for January 6th, and they want to start putting Nancy Pelosi as a witness. You know, they're gonna subpoena Nancy Pelosi. They're gonna say she's at fault for not securing the Capitol and all that kind of stuff. So here's the good news. You and I've talked about this on your radio show before. I kind of, you know, I don't like what Trump has done to the country. Obviously, for me, I mean, as you know, my politics. I don't believe that he's done a good job, and I do believe he's a crook, and I do believe he came in as a crook. And I'll tell you why that's a little different a little bit later, but. I do think that he's making us question who we are, what we are as a democracy, and putting democracy back in the hands of the people if we're willing to take it. And for that, he's been a helpful actor because he has made us think about, oh, wait a second, really? You can get away with that as president? Well, I'm not sure I like that. Well, wait a second, you can take away our vote? No, I'm not sure I like that. The attention given to our democratic system supports us getting more involved in it. So I would like to take his wacko actions and turn them into something that empowers us to, or helps us to create and foment action.
Yes, no, we're going to take a very, very short break. Our wonderful guest for again and in perpetuity, maybe, is Pat Ewing. We're at Election Magic Council, and we will be right back to explore the opportunities of the moment after this very short Taj Mahal. Thank you. Break.
She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them crossed his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Oh, get down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Ooh, chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Grab my indigo sky ship, make his voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Our guest, our theme is beauty and danger as incentives, so we have a lot of all that. And our guest, Cahooter, is political, spiritual, full-spectrum guide Pat Ewing, who has run many campaigns and also working, you know, in the environmental consulting realm of, you know, what is it again? What was the wonderful project that you were working on in Vermont?
Oh, I'm working on a bunch, but I help municipalities. I'm working on a net zero apartment housing complex. And so everything I do is green, but it's working with municipalities and businesses and things to come together to make a more green energy, housing, waste energy, everything that, you know, highway, electrified highway, et cetera, but how to actually get it done.
Right. And then the opportunity, and we can go back to what you were saying, but the opportunity, I like the natural, you know, sixth grade science experiment of saturation. So say you have a glass of water and you add sugar or salt, you know, and you stir it in and it dissolves and it dissolves and it dissolves, but then you add a little bit more and it all falls out of solution into visible evidence, the salt or the sugar. And so we have a cup full of lies. Lies keep getting added more and more and more, right? But then there's a certain point at which that last lie and it all falls out. And I view the January 6th committee, and remember, January 6th is Epiphany. It's when the astrologers arrived. It is Twelfth Night. You know, they did, I mean, it coincided with the determination of the votes, right? But, you know, so the saturation point, and because we're seeing that, right, of, you know, people who'd done many, many terrible things right now, you know, and who could have spoken earlier, right, in the hearings, right? But they're stepping up now, prodded, right? And I know you have, you know, lots of thoughts on that, but I do like bringing it up going, good, good, and where were you? And also the level of corruption that got you into that position in the White House and the, you know, whatever the thing is. You know, and I have been thinking, as I said, you know, about our long history. We went to the Parliament of World Religions in South Africa, where we first experienced cell phones. That was a long time ago. And then when you were working in the White House, and I was being sort of my neighborhood being invaded, and I was like, should I move? Should I move? I need something I can only do in D.C. And you called up and you said, I'm in the VP's office and nobody's here, and why don't you come over and we'll walk through the White House and do what blessings we can. I go, that'll do. So that was a good thing.
Yeah.
Spreading the truth revealing Muti, which may be slow acting, you know, through the White House, and you know, and seeing how unglamorous it is, you know, just backstage. But and so, you know, here we are again, and the theme that we want to kind of dissolve, you know, every participatory democracy, everybody's kind of step up on the art of conversing, you know, which is we do encounter that if we speak in any way of being supportive of Biden, you know, without sufficient luck, tugging and disclaimers, like, of course, I don't believe him, and I wasn't for him at the beginning, you know, that sometimes, you know, there are progressive teammates who in the past, you know, would spit in our eye, going, Fuzzy, you must not know. And it's like, no, I just want to sort of address that and to put before us, you know, that nuance, complexity, you know, and I do love the astro-mythological language for guiding us into we're all more than what we look like. You know, and the whole Plutonian theme, Pluto's noir, says to all of us, whatever we say we are, whatever nouns we use, you know, Pluto goes, good cover. Because we're more, we're deeper, we're all undercover agents for cultural transformation in some form, right? And you know how to kind of cook that down. And so with Biden, many things, yeah, and there is much to supportively critique and to encourage, going, no, because back to your point, you know, if we get, or if, yes, the sanity prevails and democracy survives and there's two more Dem Senates and the Dems keep the House, then we can prevent the drilling that Biden's on the brink of feeling he needs to approve in order to get Manchin, right? So in your mind, does that mean...
Yeah.
Codify and banish and ban assault weapons, all that, right?
Yes.
So... what you've been saying to the team, you know, and even the progressives who spit in your eye, is like, we're very close, right, to everything that Bernie had wanted, right? And listen to Bernie, he's not spitting in anybody's eye.
No, and AOC is not. If you hear, you listen to Ro Khanna, he's very clear that how destructive it is right now for us to sort of fight amongst ourselves. The Republicans are doing unbelievable destruction to the very foundation of our country. And we have to keep our focus on that. We have to keep our focus that we're losing our democracy. And this isn't a president who isn't open to or interested in or thinking about some of the same exact issues. So we are a two-party system, right? We are a two-party system. And we are in how we vote. We don't have a way. Every campaign is all or nothing. So you can't subdivide it like in a parliamentary system. So what happens is you would have to actually change your system fundamentally to in order to get third party votes to actually matter. You would actually have to create a parliamentary system from the outside. So you can't create a parliamentary system from the inside. So if you're voting in a Democratic primary when your democracy itself is on the line and you're voting for somebody because you think it's a protest vote, sometimes in this system it doesn't matter and sometimes it means everything. So, you know, from what I hear from some folks sometimes, they're like, well, I'm going to vote for a third party candidate because I want a parliamentary system. I don't like the fact that these two parties are in charge. Well, the way in which it's actually constructed, you can't get away from a two party system.
Well,
so you
if
can't
we
get
had
away
in,
from it.
Wait, but if we had instant voter runoff like they do in Australia, right? Or instant...
Well, that's my point.
Whichever way it goes, you have a first...
Yes. Yes, you could do... You'd have to... My point is you'd have to change it from the outside, meaning you'd have to change it to an Australian system or a... You know, you'd have to change it from the... You can't change it by supporting, through just somebody coming in, even if it's an independent or a third-party voter. So it's important right now that we look at the person who's actually in charge. And what I like, what I find interesting about Biden is, now I'm not saying that those things aren't important. I'm not saying we shouldn't look at other systems, but we have to understand that we have to take on a whole system in order to change our system. We have to change our whole system. And that maybe is a good conversation now.
Well, and I just want to amend my misstatement, too, in which I said, you know, instant voter runoff. No, that's that we get instant voter runoff when we have a third-party candidate without reforming the system. What we want is instant runoff voting. There we go. It's the reversal of those two words, which is crucial, which they have in Australia, in which you have a number one and a number two choice, which is very democratic and sensible. We just want to put this on the altar of desirable mystery.
And absolutely. And what they tried in New York City, where you can have first choice, second choice, third choice, they've tried that in Maine. I think that's all good, solid system changes. But what I'm saying is, you know, here you have Biden, who is not as charismatic, grew up a stutterer, was a horrible stutterer. I mean, the fact that this guy can actually give a speech on the world stage is he couldn't speak correctly and without a great deal of work until he was much older. So it still takes him, if you ever notice, where he hesitates when he speaks. He's looking for clue words in order to get him back into a speech. And he's like the perfect person for this idea right now of getting all of us involved because he's not a hugely charismatic person. So I just think that we're almost there. You know, I worked in an administration who didn't, I'll be honest, I mean, we didn't support people of color. They didn't try to support, I mean, the work I had to do to have that happen, they didn't support, you know, the work, it was unbelievable. This doesn't happen in this administration. It's the exact opposite. People of color are supported. Choice is supported. You didn't even talk about choice in the administration that I worked in. You couldn't even talk about it.
And you're referring to the Clinton administration.
Yes. Everything was met. Remember, we were calling, you know, this was the time period in which Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton were calling, talking about these, you know, huge crime waves, and we had to put everybody in jail. And, you know, we're not in that time period. We're actually in a time period within the Democratic Party and within our government that is actually very amenable to ideas from the Elizabeth Warren, the Bernie Sanders, the AOCs. And I will tell you this, you're not going to get everything you want. You're just not. It's not how it doesn't work that way. You advocate the best you can. You do the best you can. You come up with a long range plan and you figure out how to create an impact. You vote.
And the dissolving of the Electoral College, a desirable thing to put before us, right?
Yeah, and getting rid of the weird filibuster that Senator Byrd from West Virginia made up out of whole cloth. The filibuster used to be U.S. Senator Caroline Casey is going to filibuster, and that means she's got to go to the Senate floor and she's got to speak until she drops.
Yeah,
and
Jimmy
that's
Stewart.
It. They would bring in beds. They'd bring in cots. You know, they'd go round robin. And then Senator Byrd said, I'm getting old. I'm done with this. Here's what we're doing. And he just changed it. And this was in my lifetime. I mean, this when I was working in the Senate. This didn't happen very long ago. So the fact that this filibuster thing is not a thing. So could that be changed? Absolutely. If we had 52 senators right now and we didn't have to rely on Manchin's vote, we would have the voting rights bill. Right. We would have codified Roe v. Wade already, because the president himself said, I want you to make an exception to the filibuster for voting rights and abortion. It'd be done. So we're so close. We're so close. You don't have to read tea leaves here.
Right, and let me just go back to re-support just the model of the five-act structure, which is the structure of storytelling. And my friend, playwright Julia Steiny, years and years ago, just giving me this little cute handbook to keep in our pockets, in our magic backpack. She says, the problem in the modern world with public discourse and art, it doesn't know about the five-act structure. And 5X is comedy, not ha-ha, but how it turns out okay. 4X is tragedy. And she says, just very briefly, the flip cards, Act 1 is here we are. Act 2 is away. Woo! Act 3 is oops. Uh-oh. Act 4 is evil. Oh, the blocking characters seem to be winning, the cruelty, everything. And Act 5 is the wedding, the democracy, the go forth, the sending, the we can do this. And she says, you know, that sometimes people will try and skip Act 4, but you got to earn Act 5. You got to go, you got to see everything sketchy and horrific and cruel, and you got to all the way down. You know, it's all the way down, you know, and it's like a keeper current in the Potomac River. If you fall into it, it circulates. It'll take you all the way down to the bottom and then back up. But if you fight it, right, on the way down, it will kill you, right? So it's like all the way down to Act 4, and then the redemptive, the resurrection. And
exactly.
So Act 1 is here we are, Act 2 is away, Act 3 is oops, uh-oh, Act 4 is evil, Act 5 is... You know, and I loved our teammate, Rebecca Lowe, great knowledgeable theatrical person, said there's this thing in theater called the character of influence who usually appears in Act 3, right, which is the oops act, right? And it's tricky, you know, it's but it's the unexpected, it's the witness we haven't heard from, right? It's the thing that, you know, it's not all known. You have the character of influence that you haven't seen before as part of the whole dynamic. And you'd you know, often are, you know, queried me, where do you think we are? And I go, well, Act 4. But really, really it's everything everywhere all at once, right? And it's like, well, we're in Act 1, we're Act 2, Act 3. Oops, the characters of influence meet the person of interest. And, you know, but in the larger thing, it's true, we're kind of in Act 4. But, you know, what you'd said and what the sort of supportive auguries, you know, to be navigating by augury, you know, it's like the Delphic Oracle. Most of the questions are our plans in accord with the larger pulse of creation? And if not, what should we do to come into accord? Right, there we go. And so the auguries are, you know, Uranus, keeper of democracy, trickster, stationing at 18 Taurus, which is where it was when fighting Bob La Follette, great progressive Republican in Wisconsin, who you know, gave FDR a great deal of his ideas for the New Deal because he had implemented them in Wisconsin. Uranus at 18 Taurus, where it is now, whose image is a new continent is arising up out of the ocean. And Jupiter stationing degree also, just it really wants our attention as a crystal gazer. So it says, yes, to gaze at the desirable story is important because then the avenues of how and procedure open up that weren't apparent before. And that's what you'd been saying too, which is we're very close to goodness. We're very close to Act 5. Yeah, I hand it.
And I also say that because of what Liz Cheney's doing, Amanda Carpenter of the Bulwark called the January 6th committee the Republican Accountability Project. And that goes to what you're saying, because accountability and understanding in Act 4 and really figuring out who did what, that's important enough to vote it, to keep this commission going, so that if there are 20 members of Congress and the Republican members of Congress that are part of this thing, we need to know it and we need to make sure they're out. So it's just that important. There's also, and so keeping the accountability going, there's also a project that some of the top and most conservative Republican lawyers did, and they actually went through each of the 60 odd cases that Trump did and technically went through why they were all crap. And the guy was on TV today, Ginsburg, David Ginsburg, and he was like, it's not for people like me, right? It's not for people who are progressives. It's not for people who are Democrats. It's actually for Republicans. And why I'm saying that, because I'm pinging off of your point, they need to clean up their own act. And so you have Cheney and Kinzinger cleaning up their own act. You've got lawyers now who are starting to clean up their own act. You have even Cipollone who's thinking, uh-oh, maybe I've got to clean something up. We have to let them do that. We have to give them we have to push them to do it in some cases, but we have to have the space as a country to get that done. That part cannot be skipped over. And that's right. What we'll create in the resolution and in the marriage or whatever, how you put it, is a deeper democracy, one with real roots, one that holds the more of the promise of the of what the original idea was. And I don't even want to just use founders, because I think there was a lot more of those than we even know about. So there were women as far as the founders were concerned. There was all kinds of folks involved in those ideas. So of that promise that they wanted, that can be more and larger and more exciting if we together go through this process with intention. We can start meeting more of that promise. And I believe our country has. I believe we have gone away from it, come back to it. Gone away from it, come back to it. Little by little, we've met the promise more and more. But this is an opportunity to really get it. And if we don't get it and we don't take it, this opportunity is being given to us, and frankly, given to us by Trump, we're going to slide into something that looks like Trump light or Trump-ish or Trump more. But it's a huge, it's not even a wake-up call. It's just an opportunity.
Right. Well, yeah. And then, you bring up Ginsburg, which is, again, as Steve Berman often says, we as a country suffer from irony deficiency, right? Because Ginsburg was the great villain in the 2000 election, right? He was the Bush, corrupt lawyer. Now he's stepping into it. So we really just call it dedication.
He takes that laughing. Yeah, he takes that laughing when he gets, that's exactly right. He was the 2000 guy that cost Al Gore his race.
Well, and caused the Iraq War and the night, everything that came from that.
Yeah.
But stepping up, and we go, all right. So dedication and tolerance with full insight, right? I compost fear, but I can hear the progressive grumpitude going, or just rubbing it, and we go, it might be inside me. It might be imagined. And as an impediment, and if it is, because I can feel it as something that induces, cringing in myself. So I am now willing to dissolve, solve away a coagula, dissolve and reimagine any outsourcing to imaginary critics who are like Nina. And to go, right, deeper dedication, tolerance, art of conversing, what do we have to work with? For me, in the astro-mytho realm, the fact that Biden is born November 19th, his son is at 27 plus Scorpio, whose image is the king of the fairies, right? It's the day of the Gettysburg Address, that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. A great science fiction story, as famous authors have said. That we're given this, non-charismatic, but doing what he can. And I think it behooves us to, exactly what you see, to support with full informed, and this is, he, Jamie Raskin, these are people to whom we have outsourced Saturn, but who are tempered by depth and grief. And I remember where, there was a moment in the election where, Biden speaking outside and the crowd, says, look behind you. And there are these eagles soaring over his head. And he goes, "Ah!" And, there were times when we think that, he's kind of faking it. But this one was really real, because he was really, he goes, "Oh, I haven't seen any eagles since my son Bo died. And we used to sit, on the dock and watch the eagles coming in, and I haven't seen one since," right? So this to and fro, the grieving rituals at the inauguration, he knows about grief. He knows about grieving rituals. We support that. The the things that everybody, you know, everybody here listening, you know, minds, and we go, right, so how do we, again, see our way through this? But your point is there's so much at risk, it would be churlish to surrender to the teenage black magic mantra, like, he looks tired, he looks tired, he looks tired. He's like, he's got a pretty serious schedule, you know. And that was the earliest form of black magic that girls at summer camp we would practice. We would, you know, it was terrible. We would pick somebody and go, they look tired, they look tired, they look tired, they look ill, they look ill, they look dead, they look dead. You know, and people would actually, I mean, it's black magic. So that litany of going,
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, I was putting something on my Facebook page, just, you know, a Biden thing or whatever, and I had somebody come back at me and say, there is no difference between Donald Trump and Joe Biden. And I was like, how can you even, if he was someone who was a left progressive, I don't know where he came out of, but, Bernie Sanders, I think, and I didn't appreciate the lack of, like, I was heartbroken because I'm like, if you can't see that nuance, and I'm not, look, I worked for presidents. I don't revere them. It isn't that they aren't without fault. It's just that I'm not actually saying that Biden is the best thing since sliced bread. I'm actually saying that by taking the legs out of him right now, by saying that he's exactly like Trump, you're going to get a white supremacist fascist government that is worse than The Handmaid's Tale. We're on that precipice, and he was saying, no, that's not true. That's just such a. It's like, no, it is. You know, he would rather live under Trump because he so had it with, you know. He just doesn't see any difference. And
we're in our final moment. I don't want to give it to this guy, right? Because, you know, because it is well, you know, QAnon-ish. It's compensatory condescension in some way, which we want to throw into the cauldron. And then in our last little bit, teeny here, because we want to, you know, in future bring up some crucial races as you've done. You know, John Fetterman in Pennsylvania and Beto in Texas as performers in mystery play that would be such. And against all odds, positive, good thing. Do you want to send any blessings in our last 40 seconds I give to you about, you know, what you would love to see?
I would love to see the greatest election participation. And that will be a statement of where our democracy is and that it's strong and that we want to continue. And we can debate and talk and chat all we want, but we care about it. And the way we show how we care is by voting.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you. Thank you, Patricia Ewing. And we will keep all these conversations going in a expansively tolerant and nuanced, complex way, all dedicated to a similar vision. Thank you always so much, Kirsten Thomas. I'm Caroline Casey, and we will reconvene next week. Thanks again, Pat. Woof.